Mishnah tells us in Chavava Bei Shofar Shel Rosh Hashanah Shel Ya'el Pashut. So just I wanted to tie up a few loose ends from yesterday. One is, just to clarify a little bit about the animals here. Rashi had said that a Ya'el is a Steinbuk. Tosfos quotes it as an Ashteinbuk. Now, Steinbuk, as was noted, if you look it up online, so it is a German word. It brings you to the German Wikipedia page. And it's the word, if you actually go onto the Wikipedia page and you look at the name of the, what's called the genus, the actual Latin family name, and you take it out and you search that in Google, so then it brings you to the English Wikipedia page and you see that Steinbuch, and then I searched it in a German dictionary, Steinbuch is just a German word for a ibex. So, what was that? Exactly, right. So it's an ibex. That's what Rashi is translating. That's the German word. Now, the fact that Rashi is quoting a German word, I thought this is maybe just cute, and I don't know if this is correct, but Tosfos misquotes him. He says it's an Ashteinbuch. Rashi says it's a Steinbuch. The correct German word is Steinbuch. Rashi studied in Germany, and Rashi spent got his education in Germany. A lot of the Bali, some of the Bali Tosfos did, some of them didn't, so I'm confident with Rashi's identification of the Ya'el as a Steinbuch, and it's an ibex. If Ein Gedi, as is noted right over here, Ein Gedi means the spring of Gedi, of goats, and ibex is in the goat family. And if I looked up what are all those goats in Ein Gedi, it's called Ein Gedi. What are all those goats that are running up and down the side of the mountain when you hike there? And those are Nubian ibexes. So, certainly, in Eretz Yisrael, we have this ibex is a common animal, and it could be that that's what the Mishnah is referring to when it says a Ya'el or something of that sort. The question is about the horns, because if you look, so you'll see that the horns of the ibex generally are, and certainly the Steinbuch, if you look it up online, so they certainly are have a twist in them, or have a curve in them. They're not purely straight. The picture that we were talking about yesterday was the oryx, which I saw is really more of a, it's in the antelope family. It's more of like a cow, or it's a much bigger animal. It's not a nimble goat that jumps up and down mountains, like the Pasuk says, that Tosfos quotes, that the horim hagvolim la'ye'elim. So ibex does seem to be the better identification. The only thing that I thought, and I heard some people discussing here as well, is that in comparison to the ram, so the ibex's horns are much straighter, and they actually first go straight up, and then they curve, as opposed to the rams that look like payas. You know, they really come straight out and curl around, literally. And if you look online, you'll see some very extreme pictures of that. And if you look at the two pictures side by side of an ibex next to a ram, so it's a fair identification that the, we were thinking has to be totally straight, and that was the oryx, the straight horns. The ibex's horns are much, much straighter than the ram's, and that could be that what is meant here by the Rishonim, that we're talking about a horn that is relatively straight in comparison to the ram.
I would like to know how Rashi gets from
Right. How does he? Why does he identify that as the ibex? Right. The Bali Tosfos identify that the Aku is the Ya'el. Ako. It's pronounced Ako. Is a Ya'el, and maybe there was some knowledge that was an ibex.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Ako. The target for Ako is Yala.
Is Yala, right? Exactly. Which.
But that still begs the question
of how they knew that was an ibex. How Rashi knew it was an ibex, right? The pasuk of the harim hagvom liyeilim, where cows and antelopes don't go jumping up and down the larger animals with horns aren't the nimble animals that are jumping up and down the hills. Those are certainly something in the goat family. So the fact that it's something in the goat family makes sense that we're identifying it based on the pasuk something in the goat family, and how we got to the ibex. By the way. Just hashlim the inyan of identifying the animals here. Generally, the shofars that we're familiar with are the regular horns of a ram, the which is what most of us use in shul. There are those long shofars that people have more of a curl in them as opposed to being bent. Those are a totally different animal. Those are the Yemenite shofars, and that animal is called, I don't know how to pronounce it, K-U-D-U, a kudu. And that is in the antelope family, it's a very large animal. So how the Yemenites got to that as their shofar is, I guess, another sugya. Not immediately clear. What was that? That's what Wikipedia said. I looked up the kudu. The kudu is something in the antelope family. It's a huge animal. Antlers.
Yeah.
Oh, so I looked up that as well. The difference, I heard some guys talking about that, the difference between antlers and horns. So maybe we'll just get the official clarity on that right now. I think, Dr. Ron's not here, I think you might have been incorrect about the blood vessels and things like that being an appendage. According to, again, I looked it up on Wikipedia, what it said there was that a horn, in most of these animals, the way that it grows is that it's, is it pronounced keratin? So it's like what your nail is made out of, that the horn grows, and inside is a cartilage, which is easily separable from when you cut off the horn, you're easily able to separate the cartilage from the keratin, and the keratin is then an independent thing. It's this independent horn. Oh, we just mentioned you. We're talking about the antlers versus the horns for a second. An antler, according to Wikipedia at least, is pure bone. It's pure bone. And that's very, very different than a horn, which is keratin around cartilage, and the cartilage can easily be removed. So apparently within the antelope family, some of them have antlers, some have horns, and some actually have both. Some have a horn piece and also a bone structure that comes out, and that's the antlers. So that's a little bit here of the discussion of the Yael. Now Tosfos quotes the Aruch, who was an Italian Rishon, wrote a dictionary, and he identifies it as a female sheep, which I think we call an ewe, E-W-E. But Tosfos doesn't like this because of the fact that that's more of a domesticated animal as opposed to what we've been identifying as an ibex, and an ibex is a wild animal. It's a chaya. Okay, let's get to the machlokas now. So, according to the Tana Kama, shofar shel Rosh Hashanah has to be a Ya'el Pashut. So the first question I would want to ask, are these two different criteria, or is this just a definition of the horn of a Ya'el? Meaning, he says it has to be of a Ya'el Pashut. Does that mean it has to be of a Ya'el and it's straight, because the Ya'el horns are all straight? Or are there two criteria here? There's a species that's necessary. You need a Ya'el. And in addition to that, it needs to be a Ya'el with a Pashut horn. Now, in light of the fact that we're identifying a Ya'el as an ibex, and we noted that the ibex is, Dr. Zitter sent me a picture of an ibex that had a really, really bent cuff of horn. So it would make sense that you have to be in the ibex family, and then within the ibex family, you need a straight horn. And I did a little bit of research about different types of ibexes and different species. Some have much more bent horns and some have much straighter horns. So the pashtus would be that the Tana Kama is identifying both a species, a Ya'el, as point number one, and point number two, that it needs to be straight. However, when Rabbi Yehuda argues, Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah doesn't identify a species. He just says it needs to be a Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Rosh Hashanah, Tokim B'Shel Zecharim. He just identifies that it needs to be a male. One could understand that he also means a Ya'el, just a male Ya'el. Other opinions in the Mishnah identify a kafuf. It has to be a zohar kafuf. No mention of an ayil. There's no mention anywhere in the Mishnah of the specific species. Rashi jumps in, and Rashi on the Mishnah says, by the way, when we say a kafuf, we mean an ayil, and seemingly because the ram's horn is generally, basically always, almost every species of ram has a very, very bent horn. So even if the Tana Kama was identifying a species and a form and a shape, one could make the argument that some of those who argue with the Tana Kama are only requiring a specific shape and aren't requiring a specific species, and this is something that we're going to come back to soon. As we mentioned yesterday, the Gemara says that Levi says, his own opinion, mitzvah shel Rosh Hashanah shel Yom Kippur b'kfufin. Again, he's only identifying a shape. He doesn't specifically identify a species. Rashi would have it that, oh, it's obviously an ayil. But again, just in terms of the lashon of the Gemara, all that's identified is a shape. It's got to be a kafuf. It leaves open the possibility it could be a Yael, as long as it's kafuf. Levi, by the way, Stan Levi is Levi ben Sisi. He was, as we mentioned yesterday, he was on the border between the Tanaim and the Amorim. There's another Levi who comes up, who's a third generation Amora, but that's not the Levi that's being referred to here. And Levi gets that status of Tanu Palig, that he's sometimes considered Amora, sometimes considered a Tana. He was the Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Okay. What's the halacha? What are we paskin? And this begs a larger question, which is what's, or at least in terms of analysis, of what's the relationship between this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah. So Tosfos here says that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda and Levi, even though Rabbi Yehuda and Levi don't agree on all fronts, that was clarified by the Gemara, but in terms of what horn should be used for Rosh Hashanah, they do agree that it needs to be a kafuf. Tosfos adds an additional factor. Our Gemara had identified that the kafuf is because of the nature of tefillah, that tefillah is supposed to come from a posture of being bent over. However, the Gemara on Daf Tezayin makes an important point, stated by Rabbi Abahu, one of the Amoraim. So the question is how much this factored in of the when the Tanoim were coming up with their opinion, or how much of this is a later idea brought up by one of the Amoraim. But the Gemara here on Daf Tezayin says, Amar Rabbi Abahu, Lama token b'shofar shel ayil? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tiku lofanai b'shofar shel ayil? Kedei she'eskro lechem ha'kedes Yitzchak ben Avram. U'mal ani alechem kilu akadatem atzmichem. So there is this idea, an additional idea, of conjuring up the imagery or the memory of the Akedas Yitzchak. Now, the question is, what is the relationship between Akedas Yitzchak and Rosh Hashanah? First of all, I will just note, Tosfos brings this up to give extra fuel to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and Levi that it needs to be a kafuf. First of all, you've got the whole issue of tefillah needs to be kafuf. But in addition to that, there's another reason to use an aisle, which is kafuf. And that is because of the Akedas Yitzchak issue. Rashi also hints to it later on in the page. He also says that you need tefillah and you need the Akedah. And that, he thinks, is additional support for this position. Now, interesting, as I said, I wonder what the relationship is between Akedas Yitzchak and Rosh Hashanah. There is a machlokas in Chazal of when Akedas Yitzchak took place. There is one opinion that took place on Rosh Hashanah. There's another opinion that took place on Yom Kippur. It's two different Zohars. One is in Parshas Vayetze, and one, I think, is in Vayikra. But it's a machlokas about when specifically Rosh Hashanah took place. When Akedas Yitzchak took place. Obviously, if it took place on Rosh Hashanah, so we would understand why we would want to remember Akedas Yitzchak dafka on Rosh Hashanah. If you hold that Akedas Yitzchak was on Yom Kippur or was on some other day and not on Rosh Hashanah, so then what's the connection to Akedas Yitzchak? We would have to say that there's a we would like to remember, it's a Zchus Avos issue. We would like to remember, you know, the element of Zchus Avos is especially, I think, highlighted in the Gemara there on Tazayin, I think, perhaps, because the Gemara there says, Tiku lefanai b'shofar shel ayil, kedei she'eskor lachem Akedas Yitzchak ben Avram. Thank you, we know who Yitzchak was. Why are we being told Yitzchak ben Avram? So first of all, it might be highlighting Avram's role in the Akedah as well. It's not specifically, it was an event that is done by Yitzchak and by Avram. And also saying Yitzchak ben Avram brings up this issue of the Zechus Avos, meaning that this is, we're mentioning lineage because that's why we want to mention the Akedah.
Yeah,
here, yes, that's for sure. And Chazal do that. Chazal try to highlight Yitzchak, you know, when he knew what was going on, he said, no, Abba, I want to do it, and stuck out his neck to be active in the whole event here. There's another issue as well, which I think relates nicely to the kafuf issue, which is when we remember the aisle, what is the pasuk there says, Vayisavram aseinu vayarvine aisle achar, right? Achar, like that Yitzchak is also considered an aisle. So I just thought it was cute, but I think it might even be connected here that if you have very twisted horns, so that's why you're stuck in the thicket. If it's if you have straight horns, so you're not going to get stuck so easily in the tree branches. It's dafka because of the bentness of the horn that the aisle is stuck, and that is what facilitates using the aisle. So none of the Rishonim on the page here in Tezayin identify that the Akedah took place on Rosh Hashanah. In fact, the Ritva goes on a whole long arichos here about it shows that we're mechabev the mitzvos and how we have excitement to do the mitzvos, and that's the zchus that we're trying to mention. So the additional factor of the Akedah and, again, the importance of kafuf in our discussion, Tosas brings in here, and as I said, Rashi also makes reference to it. In truth, in Rashi, the kafuf element is very bolate. Rashi says, Hilgach Rosh Hashanah, which is litfila, ulahaskir akedos yitzchak, bo'inim kfufin. He doesn't say you need an aisle. He says, bo'inim kfufin. So it could be even the akedos yitzchak issue, as much as it's about an aisle, it's just as much about a kafuf horn. When you use a kafuf horn, it remembers, oh, the aisle that was nachas, you know, in the thick in the trees, and so that's an element here that Tosos brings in. So Tosos paskins, and in fact, Tosfos here has two opinions. At first, Tosfos opens up the discussion and says that, and as we're about to see, this is the relationship between the previous Mishnah and this Mishnah. Originally, Tosfos says that it seems that this Mishnah is not arguing with the earlier Mishnah. The earlier Mishnah had a machlokas Tanakama and Rav Yossi. Tanakama held kol shofaros are ksher and chutz mishel para. Any shofar is okay except for the cow. Rav Yossi held even the cow. And the psak was like the Tanakama. So on a halat, just in terms of what you're yotzei with, the din is you're yotzei with anything. So what's the role of our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is coming along and telling us, well, what's the ideal to use? And the Mishnah tells us, you know what's ideal? It's ideal to use either a Ya'el or a Ayel, to use a sheep or to use the Ya'el. But there's no machlokas here between the two Mishnayos. And Tosas brings three proofs for this analysis. His first proof is a diuk in the Lashon of Levi. Levi says, mitzvah b'shel kfufin. Mitzvah in general is a Lashon lechatchila. If it wanted to tell me, it would have said, this, yatzah, and then lo yatzah. The Lashon of Mitzvah, Tosfos says, is a Lashon of Lechachila. That's point number one. Point number two, he says that there's no mucker in the psukim themselves to be mechayiv by Rosh Hashanah, or Yom Kippur, and learned over to Rosh Hashanah, an aisle versus a kafa versus a pashut. There's no indication in the text. So it's going to be very hard to say that this is the chi of the Oraisa and it's ma'akev if there's no indication in the text. The third raya that Tosfos brings, and this is one of those, it just comes from his chush. He says, it doesn't sound like, when you read the Mishnayos, that this is a four-way machlokas. It sounds like, again, that's Oshikein Oshalel. You know, Tosfos thinks it doesn't sound that way. Maybe someone else thinks it does sound that way. But Tosfos says it doesn't sound like there's a machlokas between the two Mishnayos. So that's an important point in terms of how to read the relationship between our Mishnah and the previous Mishnah. And therefore, Tosfos paskins, the first machlokas is on a bidyavid level, and the psak is every horn is okay except for the cow. The second machlokas is what's the ideal to use. And we paskin like Levi, we paskin like Rav Yehuda, that it's ideal to use a kafuf, it's ideal to use the bent horn. Now, that's Tosfos for the majority of this long Tosfos. Towards the end of the Tosfos, he brings up a question. And Tosfos says, I have a technical issue. If it's really just a maila, it's just a nice thing to use a kafuf, so then how can the Mishnah suggest that the Gezeirah Shava is going to bring the din of kafuf from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur? Right, we learned out the mucker from Yom Kippur to Rosh Hashanah, but then kafuf is what's necessary for Rosh Hashanah because of the nature of tefillah, and it's going to boomerang back to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is also going to be with a kafuf. How can you suggest that? How can you, and the Karban Nisano fleshes out what he means a little bit, because Tosfos doesn't say, he just says, how can you use a Gezeirah Shava for something that's only a Lechachila? And the Karban Nisano explains, and it's commentary on the Rush, the Karban Nisano says, you know what it means, a Gezeirah Shava? Gezeirah Shava is very textual. It's related to the text. So if something's not in the text, you can't bring it over for a Gezeirah Shava. Gezeirah Shava only brings over things that are text-based. And therefore, if we're going to learn like Tosfos, and this is Lishitasa, what Tosfos said earlier, that was one of his three proofs. If we're going to learn like Tosfos, that this idea of kafuf is not in the text, it's just a nice maila, it's from Akedas Yitzchak, it's from the nature of tefillah, you can't bring that over in a Gezeirah Shava. And because of this question, Tosfos rejects everything that he said until now, and at the very, very end of Tosfos, you have this 40-line Tosfos. He's going in one direction. In the last three lines, he says, and therefore, I go back on everything I said. All my 3 points, I'm rejecting them. At the end of the day, I think that these two Mishnayos are related to each other. It's one big machlokas. Opinion number one, and he fleshes it. Opinion number one, any shofar except for a cow. Opinion number two, Rav Yossi, any shofar, even a cow. Opinion number three, only a Ya'el. And opinion number four, only a kafuf, which is probably an ayel. Only a kafuf. And Tosfos says, what do we paskin? We paskin like that fourth opinion, only a kafuf. And what emerges at the end of the day, according to Tosfos, is the halach is that you must use a kafuf. A lot of the other Rishonim disagree with Tosfos's conclusion. They assume, like Tosfos's Havamina, that the two Mishnayos are separate discussions. They are not one big machlokes. The Ramban says that he thinks that this is just so overwhelmingly obvious that these are two different discussions. Now, by the way, the reason you might be sitting here saying, like, doesn't he see that they're different Mishnayos? You should know that the breakup of the Mishnayos is very, very late. The Yerushalmi still has it like that in many Masechtas, certainly the manuscripts of the Yerushalmis that we have, that in the beginning of a Perek, you have all of the Mishnayos lumped together. There are even certain, right, in Shavuos, we have that a little bit with the Gemara there in the 7th Perek, I think, of Shavuos has that a little bit. Yeah, there are a couple of places where we still have in the Bavli where they quote the entire Perek of Mishnayos and then all of the Gemara on it. That was originally how it was done. Somebody came later and broke up just like we have in a Mishnah, the Gemara will all of a sudden have a little quote from the Mishnah with two dots before it and two dots afterward. It's almost like a koteret, and then have the analysis on that line. So someone did that for the Mishnayos as well. Originally, all of the Mishnayos were lumped together in the beginning of the Perek. So you can't bring a riot from the fact, oh, you know, the Gemara Bavli quote splits it into two Mishnayos. How can you? Originally, it was just one long flow of Mishnayos. So this is a fair question to be asking about what's the relationship. The Ramban, though, thinks it's overwhelmingly obvious that it's two different discussions. He even says, the only reason I'm telling you that it's two different discussions is because I've seen Gedolei HaMechabrim that he's made a mistake about this. Now, he doesn't mean Gedolei, I mean, he does mean the Rambam. It's not like the Meiri. The Meiri has specific nicknames for all the different Rishonim in Gedolei Adoros, Gedolei Arabonim, Gedolei HaMechabrim. So Gedolei HaMechabrim is the Rambam. But the Ramban here is also seemingly making a reference to the Gedolei HaMechabrim, to the Rambam, because the Rambam assumes like Tosfos. The Rambam's Lashon, anyone have the Rambam here? Excellent. Would you mind, thank you for passing it over here for a second? But before I read the Rambam inside, I just wanted to point out to you that the Tosfos on Daf Tezayin, seemingly a very innocuous Tosfos, doesn't seem to be saying anything. Once you see our big Tosfos, so you realize what he's doing. On the discussion of Shofar Shel Ayil, of Rabbi Abohu's statement to blow a Shofar Shel Ayil, so Tosfos there just says, Kaimalon Karev Yehuda, as was clear in the Gemara. Now, Kaimalon Karev Yehuda is a loaded statement. What does that mean, Kaimalon like Karev Yehuda? We hold like him L'chachila, or we hold like him even B'di'evet? So in light of the Tosfos that we saw, the big Tosfos in our sugya, so you know what Tosfos means back over there in Daf Tezayin. He means we hold like Karev Yehuda even B'di'evet. The Lashon of the Rambam here is Mitzvahs Asei Shel Torah Lishmo Atruas HaShofar B'Rosh Hashanah Shnemer Yom Truah Yelachem. V'Shofar, that's an important line which we'll probably come back to later when we discuss the nature of the mitzvah of Shofar. Shofar Shetoken Bo Bein B'Rosh Hashanah Bein B'Yovel Hu Keren HaKfosim HaKafuf. So this is, first of all, we have a Rishon identifying the species now. He's not just calling it a Kafuf. He's calling it Keren HaKfosim HaKafuf. And now, it sounds like the Rambam's almost like playing with you a little bit here. The Rambam says, V'chol, he already told us the halacha, V'chol ha-shofaros psulim chutz mikaren ha-keves. He's basically paraphrasing the early Mishnah, throwing it into the discussion here, and playing with the words in order to morph it to his shita. We had the Mishnah that says, Kol ha-shofaros or ksheiros chutz mishel para. Comes along the Rambam, Kol ha-shofaros psulim chutz mekaren hakeves. So what's he telling you with that statement? He's telling you that that Mishnah is part of our discussion here. And he changes the Mishnah to reflect what he holds. the Mishnah that said everything's kosher except for the parah? No. Everything is pasul except for the Karen HaKeves. So he's uniting the two Mishnayos in that statement. This is something that some of those who have do research on the Rambam try to show a lot, how the Rambam, even though it's a code and it's a halachic sefer, it's also a perish on Gemara. And you have to read within the Rambam's lines how he's playing with the lines of the Gemara in order to have a perish here also. And he's making a very clear statement here about how to see the relationship between the Mishnayos, that the Mishnayos are related to one another, and therefore he hijacks, literally hijacks the Lashon of the Mishnah in order to have it reflect what he holds. Since it's something that we've been discussing, I will just I'll mention it just as a ha'ara. Seemingly, Tosfos is on the same side as the Tosfos is on the same side of the Rambam. Tosfos' conclusion was it's a kafuf and that's it. And the Lashon kafuf and ilo lo. If you have a kafuf, tzarech lios kafuf. Now the Rambam would say it's slightly different. He would say tzarech lios kafuf of a keves. So whether Tosfos would allow a kafuf of a different species is a question which I think is fair to at least raise the question. For the Rambam, it's clear. It needs to not only be the species of a keves, it has to also be, needs the shape of kafuf, and it needs the species of a keves.
You don't know that's two requirements you want.
What was that?
You can't tell that's true.
Right, you can't tell. But for the Tosfos, where he only says kafuf, so there is the possibility that if you had a kafuf horn that wasn't a keves, it would be okay according to Tosfos. Right? For Tosfos, his statement was sorech lios kafuf v'ilo lo. It's got to be kafuf. Mm-hmm. For instance, let's say it was a ya'el that was kafuf. There is room there for Tosfos that would be okay. Hold on 1 second. However, for the Rambam, it sounds like you need not only kafuf, you also need keves. And the question that is still an open question to a degree is how much the Gemara and Tazayin played a role in that. Meaning how much the ayil of the Akedah is just a nice idea. That's what the Ran says. I gave you the Ran in the Mekosh. The Ran says, by the way, just know this idea of an ayil, like for, that's just like a nice extra, you know, custard for the mitzvah. But it's not actually part of the mitzvah. That's the minog, to blow it with an ayil. It doesn't need to be an ayil. But for the Rambam, you see that idea of the ayil, seemingly that's why he's highlighting the ayil, that the role and the connection to Akedas Yitzchak plays a much more central role, and it actually is li'ikuva. If you don't have the ayil, so then you're not yotze. Yeah, you had a question?
The Tosfos seem to hold that the kudu would be okay if you don't.
Oh, right, excellent, right. The Nafka Mina would maybe be that kudu that we mentioned, which is the Yemenite shofar, which is that very, very long shofar that has the twist in it. For the Rambam, that certainly wouldn't be okay, which is interesting because the Yemenites, just as a Ha'ar, it's interesting, the Yemenites are usually, the Rambam is like the, you know, when the Rambam said in the beginning of his Hakdama that you can skip Tor Sheba'al Peh and go right to the Rambam, so the Yemenites took that and they ran with it. So it's interesting, specifically that the Yemenite shofar is not Yotze, according to the Rambam. L'halacha, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, l'chadchila, like the Rambam, that it has to be a kafuf and it has to be an ayil. That's what the Shulchan Aruch Paskins l'chadchila. However, b'di'eved, because it's really only the sheet of the Rambam, you saw the Ravid gets his little jab in at the Rambam and he says, wow, the Rambam really went extreme in this sugya, right? Hifriz al midosav, he went extreme. You don't dafka need an ayil, the Ravid says, but the Rambam, dafka need an ayil. But l'halacha, we bring that l'chadchila to use an ayil, and I think in most communities, most Ashkenazi communities, that is what they do. They use the ram's horn. But b'di'eved, it would be allowed to use one of the other horns. Now, the interesting question that's brought up by the Taz is what if you have to make a decision? You can use an ayil, but it's a straight horn, or, right, for whatever reason, this animal, it grew straight, that's what you have. You have an ayil, but it's straight. Or you have a different animal and it's kafuf. Which one takes precedence? Which one should you do if you have the choice of doing one? And the Taz says that it's better to use the kafuf, that the ayil is the mitzvah min ha-mufchar. And the way that the Taz basically presents it is that you have kol ha-shofar chutz mishel para, that's on a bidyavid level. L'chadchila, it should be a kafuf. And mitzvah min ha-mufchar is an ayil kafuf. And therefore, he says it's more important to make sure that you're getting kafuf in than that you're getting ayil in. And therefore, that's what you should choose. And I think that that's consistent with what we've been suggesting throughout the sugya, that we're being mechalik between species and shape. And that the shape trumps the species. Yeah.
It's not so technical, but I don't think it is. Is there a shear for how much has to be coupled before it's coupled with anything that might be?
So, all right, that's an interesting question. How much coupled does it need to be
round? A cow's horn is bent a little bit. But
right,
it's not
right,
bent,
so right, right here.
If
right.
that was the issue, they would have just said that the cow's puzzled because it's not coupled.
Right, okay, that's a good ha'ara as well. It's a good ha'ara. I mean, if the Rambam is correct, or the Tosafot is correct, that kafuf is an absolute requirement, then that would be another psul for a cow's horn, unless a cow's horn is the...
No,
I haven't seen that. That's a nice hour.
The Mishnah Berurah says that it should be...
Also a zachar. Right, the Mishnah Berurah throws in it also should also be a zachar. Because of the connection to the Akedah, right. That he says that once we're going with the aisle, and if the aisle is really significant because of the Akedah, so it should also be a male... Should also be a male. What was that?
I don't think you
have trumples.
Oh, so we saw that. Right, we look. There's certain depends on the depends on the species. Yeah, some species do, some species do not.
Maybe.
Okay, I wanted to move on. So the end of the continuation of the Mishnah tells us a few interesting things. First of all, we have this whole procedure of how they would blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah and how they would blow it on during the Ta'anios. You'll note, and the Gemara is going to address this, that the way they blew the shofar on Rosh Hashanah doesn't seem to correspond to the way we blow the shofar. It says that in Rosh Hashanah, they would put the shofar in the middle, and they would have shtei chatzotzos min hatzdadim. They would blow both together, three together, the two chatzotzos and the shofar, and then the shofar would be marech, because mitzvah sayom b'shofar. The piv would be mitzupazov. They would cover it with gold. These are criteria that we don't seem to fulfill nowadays, and the Gemara is going to address why. Then the Gemara has the flip case. I just wanted to make an interesting ha'ara about the flip case. But what do you do by ta'anios? So you use zecharim kfufim. Pi and mitzufa kesef. Now it's going to be silver. The Gemara is going to address that, why we switch now from gold to silver. And shtei chatzotzos be'emtza. And the two chatzotzos are going to be in the middle. The shofar is mekatzer, and the chatzotzos are marichos, because the mitzvah sayom is with chatzotzos. So it's a little funny. It sounds like, how many shofars do we have? One, and we have two chatzotzos. But if you only have one shofar, how are the chatzotzos in the middle? It says that the chatzotzos are in the middle, and the shofar is marich. So Tosafot says, yeah, it means that you have two shofars. You have one shofar on one side, one shofar on the other side. Oh, but the Lashon says shofar's mekatzer, and it says chatzotzos are marichos. So by the chatzotzos, they knew it was plural, and they said chatzotzos marichos. How come by the shofar, they said shofar's mekatzer? So that's the reason why Tosafot needs to tell you that there were shtei shofaros, because the Pashas, the Mishnah, said there was only one shofar. But Tosafot assumes that what it means is that they had two shofars, one on each side. Okay. The Gemara now has a famous discussion. Shtei chatzotzos min hatzdadim. The shofar is in the middle. We'll just be able to begin this discussion. We'll have to end it off tomorrow. Shtei chatzotzos min hatzdadim. So the Gemara right away says, Shrei kali mi mishtame. Is it possible? We're going to blow the chatzotzos and the shofar at the same time. Is it possible that you can hear both the chatzotzos and the shofar at the same time? The Hatanya, we learn zachar b'shofar b'dibur achad nemru. The ear cannot hear Zachar v'Shomer at the same time. And if the ear can't hear Zachar v'Shomer at the same time, so we can't hear the Chatzotis and the Shofar at the same time. So why does the Mishnah tell me to blow the Shofar and the Chatzotis at the same time? You can't hear both. So the Gemara says, yeah, l'kach ma'arech b'Shofar. That's the reason why when we're done with the Chatzotis, we continue with the Shofar. And the Pashna says that we're going to continue with the Shofar a shear of a tekiah, in order that we're able to hear a full tekiah after the chatzotzos are done. There's an interesting question that I think needs to be asked. It's really two questions, and they're related to each other. The first question is, what's the chiyuv here? To hear the chatzotzos or to hear the shofar? We know that Rosh Hashanah is Yom Teruah. It's the day that we're supposed to hear the shofar. The Mishnah tells us you're supposed to blow the chatzotzos with the shofar. The Pasuk even says, b'chatzosos v'kol shofar aru l'fnei ha'melech Hashem. There's an idea of blowing the shofar and the chatzosos together. So what's the goal? To hear the shofar or to hear the chatzosos? That's question number one. The related issue is, what was the principle here of shtei kali lo mishtameh? That when there's two sounds, you can't hear. What does that mean? It means you can't hear both, or it means you can't even hear one of them. When there's two sounds at the same time, you can't focus on one and you don't hear anything? Or it means you can't hear either. And just to relate the two questions. If the mitzvah is just to hear the shofar, so then when the Gemara says, hey, trei kali lo mishtame, it means I can't hear the shofar because of that dang chatzotzos that's making all that noise. If the mitzvah is to hear the shofar and the chatzotzos, so then that wasn't the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question might have been, listen, I could focus on one, but I can't focus on both at the same time. I can't hear both. So that's a little bit of a ambiguity here in the sugya of what's the goal here and what's the problem of trei kali lo mishtame. So
I would take it not as I can't concentrate. What comes to my mind is diluting matzah.
Meaning I can't do one
meaning
mitzvah
if
fully.
You're hearing both, you're not hearing shofar. You're hearing shofar and something else. You can't dilute the sound.
You're saying that you're bringing it to an actual halachic principle like shofar echad amar rachman velo shnei shofar. So, something along those that type of idea.
Be
yeah, no, I know,
so
I realize. But I'm saying, but it's
matzah mar.
You mean to eat something with the matzah and then you're not getting a pure,
it's
pristine,
no
just not pure matzah. Okay, that could also be a possibility. So let's get there in a second. Excellent. Very good. Let's just begin with the Ritva, because the Ritva seems to ignore that point, and we'll get there in a second. So let's say how the Ritva looks at the sugya. The Ritva assumes that the only mitzvah is to hear the shofar. There might be an idea to blow the shofar, to blow the chatzotzos, but the mitzvah is not to hear the chatzotzos. The mitzvah is to hear the shofar. And therefore, the way that the Ritva learns the sugya is that we're only trying to clarify, are we able to hear the shofar sound? So comes along the Gemara and says, trei kali lo mishtame means I can't even hear the shofar. That's on simplicity's sake. Maybe it means even more than that. But on simplicity's sake, trei kali lo mishtame means I can't hear the shofar. So the Gemara says, okay, great. So that's why we're ma'arich with the shofar. In order that you can hear just the shofar. We'll be ma'arich with the shofar alone. Then the Gemara says, oh, but wait a second. Because we have indications that you need to hear the shofar from the beginning to the end. You can't just hear a piece, even if it's a full shear. It's not enough to hear a full shear in the middle. You have to hear from the beginning to the end. And the Gemara says, you're right. Granted, you do need to hear it from the beginning to the end. And therefore, the Gemara comes up with this idea that limits the principle of trei kali lo mishtame. Trei kali lo mishtame, we thought, meant I can't hear anything when there's two things going on. And the Gemara answers, you know what? If it's two different sources, and, because of the problem from Kriyas HaTorah, and it's chaviv, it's something that's very chaviv to you, so then you are able to concentrate on one because it's chaviv. And it's coming from two different sources, you could focus on one, you can hear one, you could be yotzei with one. And that's the maskana of the Gemara. You only needed to hear one, and the maskana, that's what we were trying to get the whole time, just for me to hear the shofar. We thought trei kali lo mishtame meant I can't even hear one, and the answer is that there are situations where you can focus on one if it's from two different sources, unlike shamar v'zachar, which came from the same source, and it's something that's very, very chaviv to you. And then the Gemara asks, okay, so then why do we need to be ma'arich? The Gemara says, you're right, we need it to be ma'arich not for a halachic reason. It's to send the message that the shofar is the ikar mitzvah. It's more like a symbolic reason that we blow the shofar. It's not for a halachic reason. That's how the Ritva has the sugya, and that's the conclusion. By the way, what's the definition of chaviv? So Rashi says that's an important thing to define. That's one of the criteria here. So Rashi says chaviv means it's a davar chadash. It's something that's new. Some of the Achronim point out that that's strange because the Gemara assumes that Kriyas HaTorah is not chaviv, as opposed to Hallel and Megillah, which are new. But Kriyas HaTorah is not new. Why is Kriyas HaTorah not new? You haven't heard it since last year. You haven't heard Kriyas HaTorah. Why is that not new? You also heard Megillah last year. Megillah is new. Why is Megillah new? Because you haven't heard it in a year. Kriyas HaTorah, you also. So this is just a cute idea. The Sefer Yom Tshuva says, yeah, but because you're Mekayim the din of Shtayim Mikra V'yachat Targem, so you've already heard the Parsha this year, and therefore it's not something new. It's a nice Ha'ara of the Yom Teruah. He gives a different definition, though, of what Chadash means. He says it doesn't mean it's something new. It's something that has, like, tremendous significance. So, like, the Megillah is Persumei Nisa. The Kriyas HaTorah is something that, you know, we do it every week, even if it's a new Parsha. You know, it's something that we do every week. It doesn't have that excitement of Megillah. So Chaviv, it doesn't mean something new, but it's something that's inspiring, something that's very, very exciting, which is interesting, because, you know, you would think that the Yom Teruah would be very excited about Kriyas HaTorah every week also, but that's not what he says. Okay, this was the direction that the Ritva went in the sugya. We're going to end with this. I just wanted to, prepare you for, make a few points about this just to finish this off tomorrow. The I think Dr. Ron was making this a minute ago, and this is what the Turei Evan, the Shagas Aryeh, asks on the Ritva. First of all, and we're going to talk about this more tomorrow, we're going to talk about the mitzvah of Chatzotzros in general, the general mitzvah of Chatzotzros, the famous Machlokas Rambam, Chinuch, but the Turei Evan addresses both of those questions that I brought up in the beginning of the sugya. The Turei Evan says, first of all, who says the mitzvah is only to hear the shofar? I think the mitzvah is also to hear the chatzotzros. That's part of the mitzvah. Point number one. So he doesn't like the ritva. Point number two, he doesn't like the ritva, is he says, what was the proof from Zachor v'Shomer? The Gemara said, hey, wait a second, I can't hear the shofar, just like we find by Shomer v'Zachor. By Shomer v'Zachor, we were trying to hear both, Zachor and Shomer. They were both being, the tzivoy to us was both the mitzvah of Zachor and Shomer. Maybe when the Gemara says you can't hear both, maybe if the Ritva was right, the Gemara could have responded and said, oh, it's okay, we only want to hear the shofar. Where, how do you know you can't focus on one and only hear one? When the Gemara says Zachor v'Shomer is something that the Ozen can't hear, it obviously meant you can't hear both, because you need to hear both. According to the Ritva, the whole issue here was, can I focus on the shofar? When the Gemara asks on that, no, you can't. Like we find by Zachor v'Shomer, what do you mean? Zachor v'Shomer was where I needed to hear both. I didn't need to just hear one. Maybe Enoch Hanami, by Zachor v'Shomer, I can't hear both, because I need to hear both. But by shofar, there's nothing wrong with me focusing on one. So the Turei Evan doesn't like the Ritva in the Gemara because it doesn't seem to work well. There should have been a very quick answer. When the Gemara said, hey, what about Zachor v'Shomer? The Gemara should have answered, oh, it's okay, it has nothing to do with that, because I only need to hear the shofar. I don't need to hear both. It sounds like from the Zachor v'Shomer question that the Gemara was assuming you needed to hear both. The last thing is that the Turei Evan just thinks that it's obvious just from human, just from being a human. He knows that when you have two things going on at the same time, if you want, you can focus on one and block out the other one. To be able to hear both, that's already something that's very, very hard. But to be able to focus on one, so that's something that, that's something that seemingly is not so hard to do. So why does the Ritva think that that's the big issue here? And the Gemara is only Mechadesh at the end. Oh, if it's Chaviv and it's two different sources, you could focus on one. What do you mean? What's so hard about focusing on one? And therefore, the Turei Evan's going to reread the whole Gemara, assuming that we were trying to be able to hear both. And that Trekali Lo Mishtameh is not a principle that I can't hear one when there's two things going on, but it's a principle that I can't hear two things that are going on simultaneously. So we'll finish that off tomorrow in a few minutes and go on to the, hopefully try to finish up most of the rest of the Yom. Okay, lunch is going to be downstairs. Even though breakfast was in a different location, lunch will be downstairs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then it says, however...